Welcome to the Daily Canon Podcast. Here to talk all things Arsenal is your host, Matthew Wade.
Hello again, listeners. After a very long hiatus, welcome to a Daily Canon, not so weekly, but Daily Canon podcast. It's me, Matthew Wade, host of Yore, who is finally back in the game after a very complicated life stuff, which I won't go into, because you're here to listen about Arsenal, if you're here at all. And if you are, thank you very much. Hopefully we'll make it worth your while, because it isn't just me, you'd be pleased to hear. It's also the amazing, wonderful, inevitable, one could say, Anita Sambol, all the way from Croatia. How are you?
Hello, hello, Matthew. Yeah, much like you, it has been a really hectic season. Yeah, I haven't been missing the podcast and all that, but I don't know when I would find time to sit down and record, finally, now.
Well, yes, as previous listeners are aware, we've both got young children, and as anyone with young children is aware, that tends to make your plans evolve a little bit. But it's been a shame being unable to record, given this has been such a fantastic season. So we're just going to have a bit of a chat about the season as a whole, particularly sort of post-World Cup, I guess, and a little bit of chat about what next. And hopefully we'll be entertaining enough for it to be worth your while to listen to. So without kind of getting into anything too deep and meaningful to start with, just give me in a couple of minutes your emotions for the season before we get into any detail.
Well, a mix, definitely, because I'm not sure how I feel now, because yes, I'm really, really, really happy and pleasantly surprised, because I didn't expect us to be nowhere near, you know, fighting for the title, being second and all of that when the season started, when during the summer and all that happened, we talked about before. And then I started to think about the season whole, as has been the case for the last few weeks with season ending and everything that's been happening around us and around the club and the other competitions and all that. And I started thinking, oh, why did we drop out of the FA Cup? Why did we drop out of the Europa League? You know, yeah, it's just, I don't know if it's a human nature or Arsenal fan nature, you know. You're looking and starting to analyze a bit, you know, when do we stop being, you know, just thrilled about the fact that we have such a young team, so many really good and likable players who have been playing well for, I'd say, 90% of the season. Mm-hmm. And when do we start to think, oh, what do we have to do better? What should have we have done better during the season? Yeah, it's a mix. I'm generally really happy and still behind the team and excited to see what will next season bring, with, you know, slight in the background thinking, oh, what could have been? Did we bottle it, to use a popular word?
Well, we'll get onto that in a minute.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, as you say, it's I suppose one's relationship with where things stand at the moment is a little bit related to how anyone was at the time, and I guess maybe it's age or maybe it's just my self-protection, but I guess I kept hope very early on in the season, because I think last time we probably spoke properly was quite early on in the season, and certainly a pre-season was very encouraging. You know, certainly what we saw in the pre-season games was like, oh, something's different here. So I was optimistic that I was totally convinced we'd qualify for the Champions League unless we got horrendous injuries. I didn't expect the season to go as well as it did, but obviously no one would have predicted us to be on 100-point pace halfway through the season. But at the same time, I always kept in the back of my mind that we didn't have the depth to sustain or kind of cope with absences.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, there are other things as well, but unfortunately what limited absences we had towards the end of the season were ones in positions we couldn't really replace people. I mean, you know, Nketiah is not obviously not the player that Gabriel Jesus is, but he, you know, apart from one or two games where we missed the Brazilian, he did a pretty good job of keeping the momentum going. And you can't expect your second choice striker to be as good as your first choice striker. But when it came towards the end of the season, you know, when you're going from Saliba to Rob Holding, it's not so much that Holding is a terrible footballer. He's a very good defender, but not in the system that we're playing. And it just meant that the team was not able to, at the point where you most need to be on cruise control, the team was having to rethink and having to work out a new way of doing things, both individually and collectively. And then you add into the fact that, you know, for some matches, there was Zinchenko either missing or half fit. So then suddenly half your ball progression from deep's gone. And so it's not how I anticipated those problems arising, but it was sort of the problems arising that I anticipated, just I expect them to be at different times in different ways. And so I was very, very sort of philosophical about the whole thing and just loving the fact that the season went so well. Of course, it's hard to not to be slightly disappointed. And if you'd asked me how I felt at full time against West Ham when we threw away that 2-0 lead against a team that we really should have taken to the cleaners, I might not have been so sanguine. but I think a bit like the team, perhaps, my viewpoint, when you saw the relentlessness of Man City, I was like, you know what? Even though we're sort of got a nose in front of them, we've got more difficult games at the end of the season. We just need to drop some points. And they just never dropped any points for about 5 months or 4 months. Didn't drop any points at all. And And then that sort of takes you onto the broader discussion about, how do you feel about the competition that we're up against? And
yeah, I mean, yeah, everything you said, I think that it's not just if some other club was in the same or similar situation, I expect there would be a similar outcome because I don't think that many clubs in Europe can, you know, be against City and keep all winning and all winning points, winning the matches as long as they have. And as you said, you can have a second striker as good as your first one, I wanted to add, unless you're Man City.
Well, touche. Yeah.
I mean,
mind you, even Man City, I mean, even with their amazing squad, they've just bought the Terminator to play up front. And Alvarez is a great player, but Alvarez against us would have not done anywhere near the damage that Haaland did against us. Oh.
I saw a tweet that stuck with me. If you're second to Lance Armstrong, are you actually second? Yeah. It's just, besides that, we didn't have the depth. Always the question if we should have handled the transfer windows better in summer or in January and all that. But I think that still the lack of experience from our players and the manager has been seen in those last few weeks or months. As you said, when the team should have been in cruise control, I love that term, by the way. the more experienced players, the experienced team that has perhaps already won something, you know, they perhaps would have handled that better and the pressure and all that. You could have seen when City formally won the title, we look like, you know, lots of weight was taken off our players' shoulders and everything looked a bit better in the last few matches.
When City had the title confirmed, their last two league games, they were like, okay, we don't really need to do our thing to the best of our ability anymore.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I think that the pressure as well as the all the injuries in the most crucial spaces, I mean, that always happens with us.
Not too sure.
Yeah, but the pressure, I think that they will be much smarter and more experienced in next season with that.
Yeah, I mean, there is obviously the mental element. I mean, ultimately, it's hard to know how to handle something you've never experienced before.
Yeah, because in some matches, you look like what the hell are you doing? I mean, just last week, you guys looked so good and played well, and all the passes were going really, really well, or even like half an hour ago or something like that. And it just didn't work in last few weeks before the title was gone.
Yeah, and for me, it's also that there is that mental element of the lack of experience showing and the slight lack of calm under pressure. But it's also the perhaps the lack of diversity in terms of ways we can go about doing things, because ultimately this is a squad that was put together to try and qualify for the Champions League, and it suddenly found itself in a title race against anyone's. I mean, judging from what's come out of the club, against even the preseason predictions of any of the people working at for Arsenal. And you know, one of the things that Haaland has done for City once they finally worked out what to do with him is he allows them to play three or four different ways. We saw just at the weekend in the cup final, you know, they realize that Casemiro is the person shutting down, or positioned to shut down the Man City attacking the field. So they just put Haaland on him, pumped a long ball onto Haaland. Haaland wins the header, and next thing you know, City is 1-0 up after 13 seconds. And you, without Haaland, they can't do that. They have to play the way they've played previously.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way with the Haaland means suddenly made Jack Grealish much more impactful, because Jack Grealish, when he first came, was in a team that was still set up to play a bit more with Sterling, Sané type, you know, penetrative, quick, wide players, which isn't Grealish's game, really. He's not a sprinter, but he's great at controlling and getting a bit of space and putting a ball in. And suddenly Haaland's got there for a target, someone who can hold the ball up but also get into the box, as well as being quick enough to go over the top. And suddenly it's made Grealish twice the player.
Is there a flaw to Haaland?
Yeah, I mean, some of Haaland's build-up play isn't great. Obviously, you know, he is very left-footed, despite the fact he can get certain types of finishes with his right. But yeah, I mean, his physical profile is off the charts, and he's smart, and he's a good finisher. I mean, you know, he is sort of unprecedented if he can stay fit, and that was always the question, because at Dortmund he kept getting injured. But, you know, City, as you said, have got enough of a squad, they can rotate him occasionally and take him off after 60 minutes. And also, if, you know, if they're so dominant, they've already spent quite a lot of games 2-0 up, 3-0 up at half-time. It's much easier to give players a rest. And, you know, that's one of the things. There's been a lot of criticism of Arsenal's inability to rotate this season, and Arteta's an arsehole and all the rest of it. And yes, Arteta does need to get better at utilising more of his squad. But at the same time, it's a lot easier to rest players and rotate when you're having easy games. But, you know, when you're having to rely on Reece Nelson to get 97th-minute Hail Mary winners against Bournemouth at home.
Hey, he just won the award for, what is it, Game Changer Award or something like that.
Indeed, yes.
Yeah. That was the Leicester moment from seasons ago. Yeah, when, it's like, oh, are we going to win?
Yeah, that is, It was strange because that was a game that I wasn't actually able to watch most of the game. So literally all I caught was the last few minutes just before that goal. And for me, it was kind of like, this means one of two things. This either means it's going to be magic and it's our year, or it means, which is what ultimately it turned out to mean, or it means that, look, we can't keep on having to do this.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just, if you're going to win the title, you just need to win easy.
Yeah.
And particularly in the second half of the season, we just didn't have enough of that. You know, we were winning games, but we were having to, like,
work for it.
Yeah, go through it to win games. Whereas City, you know, maybe a quarter or a third of the games their season, they turn up and the game's over at half time, and they just kind of, what was it, death by 1,000 passes or whatever it was?
Do you think, was it that their opponents, I always had that feeling that, you know, opponents seem to be much more pumped to play against us than they are against City. But then I started thinking, oh, maybe it's just like City are that much better. They neutralize them and then they look like prime Barcelona against us.
Well, it's, I mean, it's all, as with all these things, it's all of the above. I mean, you know, City are the team to beat, so there is the motivation there, but there is, but the kind of historical rivalries aren't really there in the way that they might be for Arsenal. You know, City, and apart from Man United, no other teams have a kind of enmity towards Arsenal. So, you know, it's a great scalp and teams want to beat them, but the, there's a certain degree of motivation which may not be there. But it is just the fact that, a bit like when we were the Invincibles, you know, we were so good and had been, you know, at or near the top level for a few seasons in a row, that teams used to be frightened of us. And they'd be like, oh, we can't attack too much because they'll just counterattack us and score. And the amount of games over that 3 or 4 year period where even seasons where we didn't win the league, but the amount of games we'd, it would be 3-0 up after 12 minutes, you know, put the coffee on, have a, like, you know, have a shower or something because the game's done.
Yeah, and now we are still in, if it's not 4 or 5-0, we can be still worried.
Well, there's that. There's, and of course, that psychological element plays for everyone. But it's also just the fact that, you know, we have to, this team to be in a title race had to squeeze the max.
Yeah.
And we saw in, unfortunately, some costly games that the second we make mistakes or kind of switch off or, you know, take our foot off the gas, we're not quite good enough to get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly not when, if you've got one or two people missing. And so that's why I was, I'm sort of quite, again, quite sanguine about it, is like, City won the league. They are objectively better than us. And what we don't need to get in this stage into all the kind of FA charges and all the rest of it. You know, everyone knows the story. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows that they've, that they're simultaneously bought success and been brilliant at buying success, unlike Man United, who, you know, haven't had the artificial funding, but have spent stupid amounts of money on not achieving a great deal in the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you just have to say, well, it's a shame how it ended, but even if we hadn't fallen over at the end of the season, we probably still wouldn't have won the league because basically we had to win every game for the last, we would have had to win except for the game that we could have afforded to lose the game at the Etihad, which was always quite likely, if we'd won every other game out of our last 15 games.
Yeah, it's not impossible.
I mean, you know, we, as a club, we've kind of done, gone on a run like that once or twice before in our history. But it's, the thing is, you know, this is like the most goals we've ever scored in a league season. And we didn't even have like a, an amazing goal scoring striker. This is like, the, I think, the third most points we've ever got as a team. And you know, and that's after some shitting the bed at the end of the season. So you kind of have to accept, okay, it's you know, City have made, changed the rules. You now need to get more than 90 points. That's just you know, and, unless you're lucky, like, you know, Liverpool had their year where they were, they won like virtually for every game for the first half of the season.
Yeah, had injuries and all that.
Yeah, and that was the season that City actually got like 78 points or something like that. But that, you know, that's not going to happen so often. So as you say, it's, while one can be philosophical, one also does find yourself sort of thinking about, well, what can we do to get better?
That's the thing. I mean, we haven't won anything this season, and we have won the Champions League qualifications, which was the ultimate goal. But
exactly.
I think
it's the classic Wenger trophy.
But not top, just top fourth place, but, you know, much better. the key will now be to build on this and expand in the, for the next season, and improve during the summer, replace those players that are leaving and upgrade on those that have been an issue during this season. Yeah, if we don't do that, then it would be a failed season, I'd say.
Yeah, as we seem to say every year, this is the most important summer of transfer business for But yeah, I mean, it's also very important, I suppose, when you're considering that, is to not be made to forget the things that have been brilliant about this season and what made it work, you know, when it had worked. And apart from seemingly Granit Xhaka, most of those things look like they're going to be in place for next season. So the foundation is still strong. Obviously, if we didn't do any business, you'd expect the points to drop off a bit simply because there's only so much you can squeeze the same orange and keep getting juice out of it. Mm. But obviously, it looks very much like we're trying to do that. And it seems like, I mean, certainly the Kroenkes definitely seem to have got the taste for, oh, you know, and previously we were hearing about, you know, well, you don't go into sport to win, you know. And now it seems like all their other sport franchises, they're throwing money at to try and win. And with some great success. I mean, their ice hockey team won the Stanley Cup last year. The LA Rams won the Super Bowl last year. Their basketball team's in the NBA Finals competing for the, you know.
It's our time.
And, you know, and let's be honest. We were only a few points off winning the league against the best team in the world.
Yeah.
And you know, another reminder, just to stay on brand, I have to mention officiating. You know, if the VAR officials could draw lines or could actually apply the rules properly, you know, we would have had another, you know, four points, probably, possibly more if you could take other contentious things into account in the bag before our difficult run. We probably would have been more relaxed going into some of those games and wouldn't have tensed up as much if it had such a big lead. So the margins are very fine.
Hey, we got the apology.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose it doesn't offer much comfort, but it's, what else can they do? I mean, the bloke bloody resigned. You know, the bloke basically got sacked after the cock-up again in the Brentford game at home, having also been involved in the cock-up up at Old Trafford earlier in the season. And they basically sacked him.
Yeah.
Which is good, because I've always thought he was one of the weakest refs in the top flight anyway, even when before he went to BVAR. But yeah, the margins are tight, but as Arteta says, it's those final margins which are the hardest ones to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the fact that you always need some piece of luck as well when it comes
sure.
to...
I mean, there's no coincidence that the teams that win the league tend to be teams that don't get many injuries, even when Man City win it. I mean, this year, Man City have had... They've not had any significant injuries to players that wouldn't be on the bench anyway. Mm. And even then, they've had very, very little. I mean, it's partly because they're able to rotate and they've got such a deep squad and everything. But, you know, when Liverpool won the league, no one got injured. As soon as they got some injuries, they didn't win the league. You know, and that's we've all been talking for the last 5 years about what an amazing job Liverpool have done to turn themselves into this kind of powerhouse team, which, of course, will be renewed this summer. I mean, I suppose looking at it from your perspective, before we start getting misty-eyed about certain things, just looking forward, I mean, not necessarily naming names, but what do you think we need to try and do as a team? What needs to change in terms of either recruitment positionally or type of player? Or, you know, what would you like to do?
Well, as you said, it's hard to have a backup player that is equally as good as the starter, but I think that we need improvements in some positions as well. Obviously, the defense, we first and foremost, we have to lock down Saliba and his contract. That has to be a priority if it already isn't done. I think he's on the promo for the kits and all that, so that's maybe a good sign.
Classic Arsenal transfer saga, clutching at straws. Even though I think we will get the result we want, but yeah.
Chakalin, that really, really, really makes me sad. And I think that we will miss him, but hope that there is a plan behind this, because I don't think that it's you know, a sudden decision. I think that he seems like a, you know, kind of guy that told the club and Arteta before that he plans to leave and all that. I think that they have a plan, and with Kroenke's backing, hopefully everything Arteta has in mind will come true. In defense, I think that we have to find a good, but better backup than Holding is. I wouldn't mind Rice, that has been heavily rumored during the whole season. And as a striker, I really have no idea what to do there.
but you think we should look for a striker?
Well, I'm still not sure about Eddie and what he can do. I mean, I always thought he's okay for Europa League and for cups and all that, but now we are in Champions League, so we will definitely need a really great, I'd say 13, 14 players, 15 maybe, you know, that can be coming from bench in the second half or something like that, not just, you know, someone who can fill in when Gabriel Jesus is injured or something like that. I haven't been, you know, researching stuff, and I definitely haven't watched as much football as I have before, so I don't have, you know, as clear opinions on that, but that's what I thought that could be improved.
Yeah, and it's also, I suppose, one of the things that lends to that perspective is the fact that Nketiah actually a decent goal scoring record when starting games, but a terrible goal scoring record off the bench, which is not necessarily on him, because a lot of the time he comes on the bench either quite late or in relatively dead games, or if we're trying to score, it's kind of, you know, attack against defence. But obviously that's a contrast to someone else that looks like they might be staying after all, who has been quite impactful off the bench this season, which is Reece Nelson, even in the, you know, even in games where haven't been as dramatic as, say, Bournemouth or Nottingham Forest. He's looked impactful and has sort of certainly has changed the dynamic of proceedings when he has come on. I mean, what's your feelings about his contract seemingly U-turn to sign with the club, although obviously that's not confirmed yet? And do you think he is good enough to play a bigger role next season, or do you think it's more just kind of retaining the value of the player and padding out the squad numbers?
He's still very young, right?
23, I think now.
I mean, it feels like he's been around, you know, coming from bench and waiting for a chance for the last 10 years or something like that. So you start thinking, oh, I mean, there's not much we can do with him. He should be sold and all that. But he's still 23. I mean, there's so much he can still give. And obviously, Arteta has something in plans for him. I think that he wouldn't get a new contract if there is no thinking behind that. I think that he is the kind of player that could, you know, wait and play in cups perhaps, and in the Premier League. I mean, as you said, he showed that he can make an impact and be an impact sub, as I say. I don't mind his contract extension. I don't think that he's on a big wages or something like that. He's the academy product, which is also good for the rules and all that. I really have nothing against that extension at all.
So, I mean, you did also mention the most high-profile link, I guess, that's been made, which is Declan Rice. Mm-hmm. I mean, where do you think he would fit in? Because there seems to be some sort of discussion about which of the midfield roles he might fit in, or whether he would lead to a change in our midfield. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that? And more importantly, I guess, is... do you think the kind of money we're likely to spend on him is a sensible allocation of resources?
You know how I am with money and spending a lot on players.
Cheapskate!
I mean, yeah, the money seems to be really, really, really big. It comes with the fact that he is the UK player, right? And they always cost a lot more than you would think. You have that he's Premier League proven and blah, yada, 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 everything that's been said about him and experience, and he's still young and all that. Where would he fit in? I don't know. Maybe I've been influenced, you know, too much, because it's just his name keeps popping up everywhere, and it's Declan Rice since like two seasons ago or something like that, and it just got stuck in my mind. Yeah, that's definitely who we should go for.
Well, I mean, if it makes you feel any better, even in my slightly more obsessive nature, I definitely think we should go for him. My opinion on him is, well, I suppose the most sort of simple way of putting it is he can't do the things that Xhaka or Partey can do at their best as well as either of them, but he can do more of what both of them can do than either of them can, and he can also do other things which neither of them can, and he does those other things to a very, very high level.
Mm.
I think
it would be like a direct replacement, but a bit.
Well, I think he could be a bit direct replacement, but I think his greater value would be in that this skill set he has allows us to set up in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he'd be absolutely fine as a Xhaka replacement. He wouldn't have quite the same passing, obviously wouldn't be as strong on his left foot, probably wouldn't be quite as positionally flexible interchangingly on the left, might not be as good a finisher in goal-scoring positions. We haven't seen enough of him to know that. But what he would give you, which Xhaka couldn't, is great ability to recover. He's one of the best in the world at winning the ball back. I mean, it's extraordinary, his statistical analysis on that. He's like literally one of the best two or three in the top leagues in Europe at winning the ball back. Also, because he's so powerful and quite athletic, dynamic, even though his style looks a bit clumsy, he's really effective at running with the ball. And that's one thing we haven't had in central midfield. Yeah. We haven't had anyone in years in central midfield, apart from maybe since Asante, who can reliably run with the ball and break the lines themselves without having to do so through passing. I mean, Partey can beat a man on the press and then play, but you don't often see him charging up the field and beating two or three people. And Ødegaard doesn't have the physical strength or explosiveness to do that in the same way. And while Rice isn't super quick, he's hard to stop when he gets a head of steam. And I think just both those things would give us a lot more ability to play transition football. And I think we're really good at that, and obviously our front line is excellent at that. But given everyone's so tactically smart these days, you know, that's how you, if you can't afford a super team like City, that's where you make your money, is in transitions. And we saw exactly how Liverpool used that so effectively. You know, that was their game plan, wasn't it? You know, at their absolute peak with this team. And they did so really fantastically. So I think he'd bring some of that. But I think also, because he's possibly a bit more rounded, we also have the option of just using him as a normal six if Partey leaves, or if certain off-field things become more prevalent, shall we say. We don't have any idea what's going on with that. Or indeed, just if we want to, you know, if there's changes in form, you know, because at the moment, if we wanted to play, say, Fabio Vieira or Emerson Throw and Ødegaard, you're a bit worried about, oh, do we have enough defensively? And I mean, if you've got then the best defensive midfielder at winning the ball in the country, you feel a bit more comfortable. and that's not to say that Partey at his best is not a fantastic player in that role, but we've seen now 3 years in a row that Partey can't sustain that level for an entire season.
Yeah.
And, you know, even at Atletico, he only ever played, only ever started like 2/3 of the games. They'd kind of save him for the big games, even at his best for Atleti. He's just not a 38-game-a-season guy, and we've seen.
Yeah, he's been off since international break, basically.
Yeah, I mean, not absent like last year, but certainly not at his normal level. And that's one of the things that cost us, particularly when we had disruption around him, which of course would have impacted on him. You know, when you had Zinchenko missing for a few games and Sliva missing, suddenly his job got harder at exactly the same time when he was running out of steam, and he was looking very stiff-legged and unathletic compared to what we'd seen earlier in the season. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, if you have about Partey, I wanted to ask something else.
You know, go for it.
Your opinion on Zinchenko, because there has been so much talk. I've watched a lot of matches on Twitter during this season, and Zinchenko has been, you know, so polarizing opinions. Like, is he a really great hype girl? Or is he actually a good player to have? Because, yeah, I mean, in some matches, some stuff that he did really didn't look good, but I think he's still a really good addition to the team.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been even more transformative than Gabriel Jesus. I mean, I think the most transformative player has been Saliba, because it's allowed us to push our defensive line up 15 yards and play out from the back more effectively from the very deep positions without a midfielder having to drop in the same way. But I'd say Zinchenko has also been very transformative. Obviously, as the season's gone on, opponents have started to work out a bit more what's happening there.
Yeah.
to the point where we even, you know, halfway through the game against Liverpool, where we were totally dominating them, suddenly Jurgen Klopp went, Zinchenko inverting, so basically he's a midfielder who's occasionally at fullback. Pep started doing that as well. Maybe that's what I should do with Trent Alexander-Arnold, the absolutely brilliant ball-playing player who can't really defend very well. And suddenly he's moved, halfway through that game, he moved Trent Alexander-Arnold into the right-sided Zinchenko position. Then Liverpool totally dominated the rest of the game and were unlucky not to win. And apart from a couple of blips, have been much better for the rest of the season with them being used in that way.
Yeah, it sucks when the other teams learn as well.
I know, it's shit, isn't it? Only we should be allowed to learn. But it's also Zinchenko is going to divide opinion, because he's a slightly unicorn player being used in a very unusual way. You know, 10 years ago, he'd just be a double pivot midfielder, like a budget Santi is what he would be. You know, Santi Cazorla, but slightly quicker, but not as two-footed. That's what he'd be, which is still perfectly laudable. But the thing about Zinchenko, his superpower is press resistance, calmness in possession, and appreciation of space relative to his teammates. And that's just like, it's just totally transformed the way we can do things. Obviously, we've all known that he's defensively not the best fullback. But I think the trade-off has definitely been worth it. What's going to be interesting is what we do next season, because we saw the last couple of games. Okay, it was a shit show against Forest because we never tried it before. And against Wolves, they were partly on the beach, so we don't know how effective it was. But, you know, and it was partly because people were absent. But we saw Arteta trying something different, which would then itself have an impact on how Zinchenko might be used. So whether that's just trying to experiment to how to do things and play party in that role if Zinchenko's missing or not, I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him being used slightly differently, because he is like a prime example of a footballer who can do a lot of different things. And the things that he's really, really good at can be applied in a number of different contexts. He doesn't give us a defensive solidity that Man City reverted to when they put Nathan Ake back there. But I think he's a fabulous player who's had a massive impact on this team. That's my view.
Speech as well.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, yeah.
You have to have someone like hyping up the team and, you know, reacting like he does on the bench as well, because that means so much for mentality and everything.
Which takes us straight on to Jorginho, January transfer, right? Because we didn't really get to discuss the January transfers before. He's obviously, he's virtually player coach already. I mean, when he's playing, he points and tells everyone where to go. And when he's not playing, he stands on the touchline coaching. So, you know, when he's warming for the sub.
Yeah, I think that I expected him to feature a bit more during the season. I think that in some matches we could have used him and Trossard as well. It's just, yeah, I'm still not convinced with Arteta's in-match decisions and match management. So I do like that transfer. I didn't like it at first because another Chelsea reject and everything that goes on with that. But I think that he, as you say, player coach, definitely. And that's something that this young team definitely needs as well.
Well, it's also, I suppose, it's one thing buying old Chelsea players who can't run when they used to run, but he's never been able to run. They did an interview, I saw something online, you know, one of these ridiculous interviews where they get some young lad who looks like he's in a YTS training scheme interviewing the players and asking them dumb questions. Jorginho is commenting himself about, you know, they were talking about counter-attacking them, and Jorginho is himself saying, like, yeah, if I was in a running box to box, people would be overtaking me. You know, he knows his limitations and he knows what he's good at. Yeah, I think he could have featured a bit more, particularly when Partey was struggling a little bit. But at the same time, we saw in the game against Man City at home when he played instead of Partey that against it's that exact same thing that we've got throughout the squad, really, which is against the absolute best teams. And we're talking maybe 10 teams in the world. Against the absolute best teams, we've got players that can't quite be successful enough in those situations. We've got not quite enough players who can go up to that absolute elite level. We're an amazingly functioning team. And, you know, that's one of the things that came out of those games of City, which is another reason why I like the idea of getting Declan Rice if we can, is basically City just in both games just picked the biggest team physically that they could and basically just bashed us about. Without being violent, without being kind of overtly dirty, but they played, I mean, you know, even the way they utilized Haaland, they basically played like the ultimate superpowered fever dream of Tony Pulis Stoke. Like, because they were hitting Haaland long, they had De Bruyne playing more as a second striker than actually playing as midfielder. And they played four centre halves in the defence, virtually. And they had, apart from Bernardo Silva, they had like quite big guys in midfield as well. Yeah. And we were physically, we just couldn't actually match them physically. Yeah. And so that's, you know, that's an illustration of where Rice and obviously the other link is Caicedo, who we tried to get in January, and not being able to do that led us to get Jorginho. You know, that's obviously what those transfers are about. It's the fact that. In fact, you look at the games we've lost this season.
There's nothing wrong.
I think apart from Brighton at home, every game we've lost this season has been against a team that's basically been physically strong, quite physical, aggressive without being dirty, for the most part. And, you know, we still don't have quite the right setup to be able to compete physically with those teams. Now, sometimes we can still beat them technically. But if you've got a team that's capable of doing that and are at a high technical level, we struggle. Brighton was just something else. Brighton was a first goal game where you know, we should have scored in the first half. We had enough chances. We didn't. They get a freak opening goal and then we didn't know what to do with ourselves.
One of those things, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And I think morale was quite low going into the game. I've forgotten what my other train of thought. I was going to ask you something else. So thinking up front, obviously you cast doubts over the viability of Eddie Nketiah as a Champions League striker. Do you think what kind of striker do you think we should? Well, I'll say it differently. What kind of forward? Because maybe we want someone that could replicate more of what Martinelli does if Martinelli's out. But what kind of forward do you think we need to go for?
Maybe, as you said, we didn't have like an attacker that scored a lot of goals, even though we scored a lot of goals during this season. But, you know, wasn't one standout position. I do like that many players are scoring a lot of goals. But I keep wondering if perhaps that's what we have been missing, you know, Henry style or something like that. Maybe Jesus, if he stays healthy, he could get to that in this season, like a proper season in Champions League football and all that. And as a backup.
Well, backup competition, alternative to play a different style, maybe.
I'm interested to see what we will do with Balogun.
I mean, the mood music suggests that he's, you know, everything you're hearing suggests that he's basically wants to go and be first choice striker somewhere else. That's going to, you know, in sort of in keeping with his changing to going to the USA national team and the amount of hype there's been about that for a player that, you know, has one season where he's been good in France. But
Lacazette has been good in League One this season.
Well, the thing about Lacazette is it was just he couldn't keep up with the physical intensity of the Premier League. That's what it was. We all knew there was a good player. We all knew that he was a if he could actually get into the box occasionally, he's a great finisher.
Could the Balogun compete with that in Premier League? I mean, he's obviously young.
We don't know. That's the thing.
I don't think that he would be a starter here.
No, I don't think he's got a hope in hell of being a starter. And that's the slightly strange thing about it. You've got a situation, a guy who's, you know, he wants to be starter at his next club. He's doing everything he can to raise his profile. He's had a great season. But he's not going to be first choice at Arsenal unless there's like a pre-season miracle and there's an amazing transformation occurs. I mean, I've seen a bit of him in France this season, you know, extended highlights and this and the other. And he's good. I mean, he's got more all-rounded game than Eddie Nketiah, but I don't see anything that's absolutely elite. And I don't know if he's different enough to what we've got. So I think he'll probably be sold if the club gets a good bid, particularly if he doesn't seem to want to sign a new contract.
Yeah, that would be a good. I mean, we do need funds as well. So you don't think that we need a new backup striker or something?
Well, I think we either need a different type of striker up front,
mm-hmm.
maybe someone that's a bit, maybe the youthful version of Olivier Giroud off the bench, or we need someone who can play wide, who gives some of what Martinelli does in terms of like speed and directness. Because you noticed a couple of games when Martinelli was injured.
Yeah.
We didn't have that penetration because Trossard isn't going to hug the touchline. You know, he's going to come in and interchange with the striker. If he plays on the left, we know that about him. He's a small spaces footballer. He's really good. He's like a five-a-side genius. You know, he's one of those kind of players, but you don't want him running 50 yards after the ball. So I'd be happy with either of those two options.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I suppose what I'd really like is like what internet hypers think that Marcus Thuram, who's going to be leaving Borussia Mönchengladbach on a free, mm-hmm. what internet hypers think he is, because he's strong, tall, powerful, quick, scores goals, but he's a bit clunky and he's not quite as quick as people say he is, and he's not as good in the air as you think he should be for his size, you know. But like, you want like the next level version of him. Someone who's early to mid-20s, quick, skillful enough to beat players, but also has a bit of physical presence. Unfortunately, there's not too many of those about.
Colon, maybe.
Yeah. So I'm not quite sure where we're going to go with that. But we don't know how much the club's got to spend and what its priorities are. I mean, if you believe the rumours and we're going to get Rice and Caicedo, there's not going to be much money left in the bank. and you know, maybe strategically it's better for the club to think, okay, well, we can't afford all the positions we want this summer, so what can we get and what can we make do with? You know, I mean, I think they'll definitely get another centre-half.
Mm-hmm.
Or someone who can place it either a centre half or a right back that can make White go back to centre half, one of the two. I don't know which.
Did you see that Cedric Suarez is still hoping he will return? I forgot. He's still our player.
Compete for my place. What do you think he means by that?
Maybe I always thought that he could be a really good kit model.
I have to say, have you ever seen pictures of him when he's like 20?
No.
He was hot.
He is still hot, I mean.
Well, I mean, he looks a bit like someone who should be selling cars to me. But like when you just Google, seriously, look him up when he's like a young guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, super good looking. Anyway, that's a little bit of football porn for anyone who's so inclined. I mean, that's
another easy summer ahead of Arteta and the team.
Well, lots to do, but my view is to quote a certain someone who may be involved in the club, you know, be excited. Because, you know, every other summer until recently, even for the last few years, we've been like, how do we clear the mess up? What do we do to stop getting worse? How do we get ourselves back into Europe? How can we attract players that other teams want? Do we have to pay them more? How are we going to sell any of the shitty players that no one wants? We've been through that now.
Yeah.
Like now, I mean, probably Cedric, and I suppose you could include Pepe when he's after his loan, and maybe Tavares.
He's still on loan.
He's still on loan, yeah. And didn't have a great season in France. Like, you know, those are the only people that we're going to struggle to get rid of. And none of them are like absolute disasters that we won't be able to get rid of one way or another. And we're in the Champions League. And we just had a really good season where we showed, and we've got the youngest team that's still in the division. and so
good mood overall around the club. And
yeah. So we're a destination again. So now, you know, I mean, could you imagine 2 years ago, where we were 2 years ago, and Declan Rice is available to leave? No one would even be talking about him joining us. It wouldn't be in the conversation because of Chelsea or Man United or Bayern Munich. Bang, we wouldn't even be involved.
Yeah. How things change.
So we're now in a situation where, okay, there's a lot to do and it's not easy to do, but so much more is possible than has been for a number of years. Particularly as also the wage bill's been sorted out. We've got Champions League money, so the wage bill can go back up again. You know, they seem to get their shit together in terms of showing people that they wanted and renewing contracts early where they can. Obviously, they don't have complete control over that. So I think it's really exciting. And the last thing I wanted to touch on just very briefly before we wrap this up is two people who I guess a lot of Arsenal fans are not quite sure what the future holds for. And that would be two different attacking midfielders, one of whom's only spent at the club for a year, the other one has missed a year. Fabio Vieira and Emil Smith Rowe, what's your feel?
It's a difficult one. Because as you said, Fabio Vieira has been here for a year and he hasn't been used as much. I wasn't really impressed with what I saw when he was playing. I think that he still looks it. He's not as fit physically for the league. Maybe it's just me, but yeah, I think that he still needs some time and adapt and play. I think that there is something there. And Smith Rowe, similar like Jorginho, I think that he could have been featured a few more times in the title running, and I'm not sure what happened there. Why he was? Is he injured? And the club are not?
No, he's not injured. He's been largely fully fit since I guess February, March.
He's been on the bench pretty much regularly, right? And just not getting any minutes, and it just, I don't know what's behind that.
And this is a tricky one, and it's going to get even harder for Arteta going forward. Is you've got young players who either are, you know, trying to break through, or are new to the league, or in Smith Rowe's case, returning from injury, and they need game time. But then suddenly we're now playing at a level where you're competing at the real sharp end. And let's face it, we found ourselves in the surprise title race where against City, as we've already said, you have to win all the time. So then taking risks.
You play the best team available.
Yeah, which of course, perhaps we didn't get the balance right in that. And but it was also partly influenced by people who might have got more minutes getting injuries at the bad times. They're getting injuries at times where they could have got more minutes. Like, for instance, Nelson and Smith Rowe were both absent for like FA Cup, League Cup, dead rubbers in the Europa League, which is where they're getting
they could have played.
It's a really interesting one because it's hard to know where exactly they fit, but they've both got so much talent, you don't want to give up on them.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. You want to see, perhaps maybe until January, you know, see how we will do in Champions League and Cups and all that. And I mean, there will probably be, maybe we could, you know, be a City and win 3-0 after 15 minutes and then have them play in second.
well, that's the hope, isn't it? but I think it's also, I think a big thing is, we've seen with Arteta is pre-season is like the magic time. Like certainly this last preseason, you know, before this season,
it gave you hope for the season.
Yeah, you saw how the team was playing in preseason. You're like, well, this is different. and we're just playing in very different ways to what we've done before. And certain players are looking like they've gone up a level. And I guess it's hard to replicate that when, you know, neither of those players had a preseason at the club. So we have to see what happens in preseason. And I think that's going to inform a lot about where they stand. I mean, you're totally right that Fabio Vieira needs to get adjusted to the physicality of the Premier League. But he also needs to get his confidence back. Because you saw in Portugal, he was much more assertive.
Yeah.
And by the time, and by the end of the season, this season, he was kind of hiding a bit. Taking up lots of positions where he couldn't get possession, which is like the opposite of what he was doing in Portugal. So, yeah, I mean, it's a big year for them both. And maybe it's a bit of a, to sort of riff on Highlander, there can be only one, you know, which one of them is going to cement their place in the squad and which one of them is going to find their way off to pastures new.
I think I would always go with the academy product.
Of course, and ultimately we have seen that if he's fully fit and firing, Smith Rowe can be effective in this league.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in the system we play now, but, you know, you don't do what he did in the first half of last season and suddenly become rubbish.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it's a case of, can he find that confidence in his body and can he adjust to the way his body's changed after the operation and everything? And that's always an unknown, but we know what the impact level potentially is for that player. Whereas Fabio Vieira, there's much more of a question mark because we just don't know if he can fit in this league. He's got all the talent, like, you know, even from what we've seen, that he's like an end product monster, like his wide crossing, his shooting, even some of his footballs are a really high level, but he also vanishes and doesn't win duels and can't seem to break away from players when he beats them. And so can he get that bit stronger and quicker? And if he can, that could be massively transformative. It's also partly down to usage. Like, to be honest, I think we've learned that he's the sub for Ødegaard as he stands now, rather than being the sub alternative to Xhaka, you know, because of his level of what he brings. But yeah, lots of question marks.
Always fun.
Always fun. And for the moment, we're going to have to end it there because, unfortunately, small people intervene again. And I need to go and collect a small person. but we'll speak again very soon. There's lots more to talk about. But certainly after the Champions League final, we'll then do a bit more of a full season, kind of like, hey, what happened? What are your memories? And stuff like that. So we'll go in a bit more detail about, actual games and stuff. but until then, it's wonderful to speak to you, Anita. Thank you.
You too, Matthew, as always.
And wonderful that anyone is listening to us. So I hope if you are listening to us, you vaguely enjoyed this and that you have a wonderful week. All right, take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.